Hey, Fidelity. What's it cost to invest with the Fidelity app?
Start with as little as $1 with no account fees or trade commissions on U.S. stocks and ETFs.
That's music to my ears.
I can only talk.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Zero account fees apply to retail brokerage accounts only. $0 commission applies to online U.S. equity trades and ETFs and retail Fidelity accounts. Sell order assessment fee not included. Some account types and securities excluded. Details at fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
All right, welcome to Bet the Edge. I'm Jay Croucher here with Drew Dinsick. As always, today we're going to talk some NBA awards markets, particularly Sixth Man of the Year, and then we'll talk some NFL draft, which those markets are constantly in flux, but particularly at the moment. But Drew, how's it going? What are you betting on at the moment?
Oh, man. What not to bet on right now? There is a Masters 1000 going on in Miami. We have NBA, where there are numerous kind of meaningful angles to crack at right now. A lot of uncertainty with player availability today, tomorrow, and otherwise. And then, of course, gearing up for March Madness and trying to find people who will take a bet on the draft. So a little bit of everything.
Yep, indeed. All right, well, let's talk about the NBA. Let's start off with Sixth Man of the Year, which has been an interesting market this year and the 2 years prior. We'll say that what happened with Tyler Hero 2 years ago, because I know you and I are both on that from preseason, if only all awards market long shots could do it like Hero did, Drew, where you just back 30 to 1, 20 to 1, he firms on day one, day two, and then leads wire to wire. We're not going to have wire to wire in this year's iteration of Sixth Man of the Year, where, I mean, initially it was Emmanuel Quickley for a little bit. Austin Reeves looked like he was going to be the guy. Tim Hardaway got into like minus 140 at some point. But Malik Monk, who we've tried as best as we could to take down, he is now minus 400. He's as short as minus 900. Some spots, Norm Powell, Naz Reid are the two main challengers. And then you have Bobby Portis. Caris LeVert, who went off on Monday night, but a little too late, and then Tim Hardaway Jr. You can basically write your own ticket on him. But what do you make of this market?
The Malik Monk experience this year has been unexpected and wild, and the Sacramento Kings this experience this season has been painful for me from a financial standpoint. This team continues to win despite having clearly the 10th best metrics across the West in almost every which way you can possibly dry them up. They are exceeding their expectation in terms of wins relative to point differential, relative to every possible metric. And they continue to win basketball games even when they're staring death in the face against a team that's not playing for anything like the Grizzlies last night. They find a way to get it done in overtime, running away with it. A ton of it has to do with Malik Monk being able to be the second creator after De'Aaron Fox and being a huge part of this closing unit. I think ultimately the big part of the thesis beyond just one of our guys will emerge was the Kings have to run out of gas here at some point. The luck will end, and it has not. And even if we kind of realistically give them a relatively unlucky finale from here to the end, there's not enough games left for them to really slip into the 9-10, which is where I thought they were headed as we were coming out of the All-Star break. So Kings are going to be in the 7-8, and that takes a little bit of the bitter pill away from voting for Monk for a Sixth Man of the Year. And I think ultimately his statistical case is kind of speaks for itself. So you needed an X factor for people to keep him off ballot. And that was going to be people just generally having a mental expectation as they were filling out their ballots that, well, the Kings are already in the 9-10 and their dogs at home to the Warriors. So not voting for a King, right? Like that was the whole handicap, and that's not going to happen now. So I think ultimately this is this one's a done deal, and it's a shame because you've had this was the weakest class of six man of the year that I can ever remember. It was the most haveable, and we're not going to have it.
I think the thing with Monk is that, to your point, a lot of the handicap was that the team would be, you know, they had a material chance of being a 9 seed or a 10 seed, or they had a material chance of being like a 44 win 8 seed and not being particularly inspiring, and he might have 10 fewer wins and be 6-7 spots in the standings behind Reed or Powell or even LeVert or Portis. But the thing is that, so out of the All-Star break, he's played these 5 super high leverage games where I think he was down in the final minute against Minnesota, San Antonio, and Memphis. And then he had these 2 massive games against the Lakers, which would keep a play in positioning. And he won all 5 of them. He went 5-0. And so if he goes, I'd say probably your average expectation on how everything unfolded, he should have gone 2-3 or 3-2. But the fact that he swept them pretty much makes this close to a wrap. I mean, he has the best counting stats. He is, to be fair, like he is the most important guy to his team of all these candidates.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think what I was largely counting on was not that I thought that he didn't have the best case on merit, just that his case wouldn't resonate with voters who really, I think, overweight team success. I think Monk has a better case than, I think he's been better than Norm Powell and Portis and LeVert. I mean, Naz Reid has been, his advanced stats are very good, but Monk is just so much more indispensable to his team. And the fact that he's been closing games, like he had this stretch where he was playing, you know, 20 minutes a night for a time. It's like, well, if this rotation holds like it was in late January, then he's just done. But he's played really well. He's made shots. I don't think this is like completely wrapped just because, you know, they're a half game out of the 8th seed. They're 3 games ahead of 9th. He could just slump for a month and Norm Powell could shoot, have like 65% true shooting for a month as the Clippers win some games, or Naz Reid with his head injury could be fine and could surge and the Wolves could get the 1 seed. Like if the Wolves are the 1 seed but behind Naz playing really well and Monk is an 8th seed, then, but these are, you know, outlier things. So I think from here, like if you can back -400 or throw it in some parlays, I would take that at this point. I think he should be more like -1,000.
Yep, no disagreement. And again, like pulling my hair out over the same points here, but like the Kings and the Rockets effectively have the same point differential this year, Jay. And the Rockets are 3 games under 500. The Kings are 11 games over. Like how in the hell is there a 14-point gap in performance when your point differential is effectively the same? And it's like when the Kings have lost, they've just lost that bet. But like at the same time, like they don't pass the eye test. They don't pass the smell test. I don't know how it's happening, man.
To be fair, a lot of it is Monk has been like amazing in these close games at the end. Like he took over in overtime against the Grizzlies. Yeah. He beat the T-Wolves by himself. So
Lakers too, yeah.
Yeah, no, he's been great, and I think that he's probably doing enough to win the award, unless there is a final twist, which we're running out of time for a final twist.
Yeah, speaking of final twists, we're going to get a final twist in any of these awards, or is this all cooked?
No, I think we will. I think MVP is largely on the Jokic path, as we've talked about. I think Defensive Player of the Year, I think this market is just ridiculous. Like, I just don't think Wembanyama is any chance to beat Gobert if he plays 2 more games. I think he's just completely dead in the water. The team's, 15-53, and they have the 23rd ranked defense. And beyond that, it's just enough voters have come out and said, like, I'm not voting Wembanyama. Like, some have even said he's not even going to be on my ballot. Like, I just can't put the 23rd ranked defense, a 15-win team on. I think Wemby could get 60 first place votes and still lose the award. And he's not going to get 60 first place votes. He might get like 10 or something. So I think that he is pretty much no chance there. Coach of the Year, I think we may see some twists in that if OKC fall off and they seem to be running out of steam a bit and they've got a tough schedule. Clutch Player, I think DeRozan and Curry, I think that is tighter than what the market is showing. We could say that DeRozan is perhaps a slight favorite, but I think that is much tighter than -250 DeRozan, +210 Curry. Okay. But to me, the big one still is just most improved player. And Tyrese Maxey, some spots is like beyond -300 and Kobe White's back out to +230. I'll give my thoughts, but what do you think about this market?
I mean, I'm losing a little bit of hope that the gap was going to close anymore. Like, this is weird. The Kobe White injury timing was just really, really, really problematic. And I know your kind of mental model probabilities on this are, you know, well off market. And I'm keen to hear your case, but Embiid's coming back soon. Maxey's going to be able to take a little bit of a step back offensively, and it's not going to hurt his stats, but it's going to help people's perception of the Sixers probably. And I think that might be enough.
I think the thing with the market is I just wouldn't really pay any attention to it as any form of truth, because Tyrese Maxey was like minus 160 and then he scores 30 points on 11 of 24 shooting, 3 of 10 from 3, and beats the Heat without Jimmy Butler, and he goes to minus 320. Like, these markets, they move way too aggressively off of individual moments. Like, there is no way that Tyrese Maxey, his win probability shifted from just over 60% to above 75% off a 30-point game with below average efficiency for him. Like, it's just, that's just not the case. Yeah. And I think that what happened with Emmanuel Quickley last year is good. Good proof of that. The fact that, you know, Quickley would score 40 points in a start and the market would aggressively shorten his price. And I probably bought into that too much as well. But like, voters don't live these markets game to game. And the voters aren't sweating out most improved player night by night. Like, it just doesn't happen. They're going to take their step back.
I'll go a step further. They're not even thinking about this unless they have to do content. Like, honestly, like, there will be people that I think will probably sit down and be like, man, I haven't thought about most improved players since I had some random conversation with somebody at the All-Star break. Like, surely, like, that is okay. That's a very fair point. If you had said, guess which one I think is the most wide open, I think I would have guessed MVP. You thought was maybe a little less decided than the last time we talked about it. And this is one where I do think a lot of people are like kind of generally thinking about it more regularly, as particularly if you're in the content business whatsoever, for, you know, with an NBA vote. And maybe I'm just kind of dreamcasting because I want this to happen. But when I was watching Mavs Nuggets, I was literally like, please make this to 3-6. Like, give us a best of seven here. This will be awesome. Right. And I thinking that more through, you know, like, how do we get there? Well, something weird has to happen. Really, the Timberwolves have to just beat the Nuggets one more time. And then all of a sudden, the Timberwolves have the tiebreak in every effective way against the Nuggets, which makes, you know, Denver all of a sudden looking up, and they're back to where we thought they were around the All-Star break, where they might be the 3 seed. You know, that could be pretty interesting and impactful for these guys. So I don't know, you know, is a 3 seed for the Nuggets enough to open the door? How many wins delta need, you know, do we need between OKC and Denver for this to be, you know, an open question again?
Like 3, if OKC is the 1 seed and they're 3 games ahead of Denver, I think that opens the door. If it's 2, and the timing of it matters as well. Like, the problem is that OKC could end up 3 games ahead of Denver, but if they create that gap on the final weekend of the season, then it probably just doesn't matter. I think that enough people have now just anointed Jokic in a way, and he's just played so well out of the All-Star break, where I think they are going to need a losing streak. And, you know, we're recording before the Minnesota game, but they're going to have to lose random games to, like, the Knicks, and then they play the Cavs next week, and they're just going to have to drop random games, and there's going to have to be separation, like, now. Shea needs the separation now, I think, because he's not going to win an individual head-to-head. It needs to be based off of team success.
Okay, and Giannis, the door is closed, if he beats the Celtics convincingly tomorrow night?
I mean, I don't think he's like 0%, but I think he's pretty close to a rounding error at this point. I do think Luka Doncic is basically 0% at this point. I think it's Shea or Jokic. I think Jokic has the heavy upper hand. They need to start going in opposite directions in the standings ASAP. Last thing quickly on most improved player, just wanted to add that this is the one award where I don't really care about my own thoughts about it, about merit, because it's kind of like comeback player of the year in the NFL, where it's very subjective. And I think the way to handicap this is simply to just listen to what voters are saying. And this is in complete difference to like defensive player of the year. I almost don't listen to what voters are saying, because that follows a very strict model historically. And MVP, it's much more easy to predict as well. But with most improved player, It's really just about what is resonating with voters. And from everything I've tracked, and maybe there is this silent maxi majority that just isn't talking, but what I have seen and tracked, it is overwhelmingly Coby White. And a lot of people are saying that Maxi is just not a candidate for them. Wow. And I think what has happened in this award is that the fact that Jalen Johnson is disqualified, and people don't realize this because he can still play 65 games, but one of the games he played 8 minutes, so it doesn't count. So he's out. He's disqualified. Sengun played 63 games. He's technically still eligible, but he's not going to have any momentum because he's not going to play down the season with the injury exception. And so I think the fact that the field is just withered down now to two guys. And I think Coby White is going to be on almost every single ballot. And I think Maxi, Ja Morant was left off 49 of 100 ballots. Some people just don't like voting for the guy who was already really good. And we've had voters come out and say, like, yeah, I don't think this is an award for Tyrese Maxi. He was already too good. And it's not like he's already too good. I'm putting him second or third. It's like, no, I'm not putting him on my ballot. He's not a candidate. And so I think that Maxi could finish with, you know, 10 more, 12 more first place votes than Coby White and still lose the award because Coby is just going to get a ton of seconds and thirds. What do you think?
I think you make a very compelling case.
Yep. Okay. I don't think Coby White's like a lock or anything, but I just think that he should be 60 to 65% and the market is saying he's 30% at the moment. Okay. So we'll see. I don't think him missing this time, I don't think it matters that much because one, he's going to be back in like a game or two. And two, I kind of like that he's missing the time because his efficiency is more likely to go down than up. So if you can just kind of lock and not tank your stats for a while, they're winning anyway. And then he comes back, he'll still be fresh in everyone's mind. It's a much better story than Maxi as well. This is linear improvement for Tyrese Maxi. This is the easiest thing in the world to predict. That's why everyone bet him at the start of the season. With Coby White, who, you know, say what you want about him as a player, it's a much better kind of career change improvement story that I think is resonating with people.
Yeah.
Okay. Drew, we're closing in on opening day, but it's never too late to squeeze in another draft. So for those cramming before the regular season begins, grab your RotoWorld Baseball Draft Guide. It's loaded with comprehensive positional rankings, projections, and player profiles to ensure your draft is a success. Visit nbcsports.com/draftguide and use code baseball24 to get 10% off at checkout.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other topics, and managing it as one big juicy investment. Mmm, now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
All right, NFL. I'm going to talk some of these draft markets, particularly around the wide receivers who seem to be shaping the middle part of the top 10. Let's start off with the fourth overall pick market, which has, as soon as it kind of shifted towards the Patriots taking a quarterback or potentially someone trading up to take a quarterback, this is thought to be a landing spot for Marvin Harrison Jr., who's minus 230 to go four. Cardinals currently hold the pick. Do you think that this is where MHJ lands up?
Three interesting pieces of information have happened since the last time we talked about the draft, and we got to synthesize this to a degree. The first is that the Minnesota Vikings have acquired a second first-round pick. They now have, presumably, if you depending on which chart you look at, they now have enough draft capital in the first round of this year's draft alone to get up to as high as three, which means if they are, you know, ultimately eyeing the fourth best quarterback in this class, or the fourth, I say fourth best, the fourth quarterback off the board in this draft, they could swap with the Cardinals. Cardinals get two picks. You know, Cardinals with three first round picks in this draft would be really something. You know, I think that that's, you know, it is an actual realizable path. The fact that you can get that at 5-1 is actually kind of not that crazy. And I've asked everyone that I could think of who would have any inkling of knowing after the Vikings made that move, like, who's, you know, you don't make that move and then start to talk. Right. They obviously have a suitor already, you know, have had discussions with to move up to get JJ. So, you know, when that news breaks, then this entire market blows up. Right. All of them, four or five, all of it, everything. Yeah. So just kind of keep that in mind. And I think, you know, the Monty Austin Fort, mentality last year of we're going to accumulate picks, we're trading back, this the third pick is effectively, you know, open for bidding, you know, that tells you a little bit of something about his constitution and about the arc he sees in terms of how he wants to build this. And he's got lots of, you know, enough Patriots kind of DNA that I would say maybe that's just what he's going to do every year, is trade out and accumulate and try to take more swings. And so I think ultimately, like, rationalizing that the fourth overall pick is not a lock for Harrison is important to kind of recognize. The second and third pieces of information both came from the same character, and he's an important player in the draft information space, and it is, of course, Daniel Jeremiah. And Daniel Jeremiah, when there was really nothing to tweet about football, and the entire world was kind of, you know, college basketball was sucking all the oxygen out of the room in the sports information space, Daniel Jeremiah was like, he kind of recycled something that has been said multiple times. And I really didn't understand why he was making this point, but he's like, a lot of teams have Malik Nabers over Marvin Harrison Jr. on their board, or a couple. I think, I don't even remember if he said a lot or a couple, or if he implied like there were more than one in the top 10 that do. And I was like, oh, okay, interesting. And then maybe more impactfully, and even more quietly, because all it did was go out through his mock draft, he put the Jets trading up to five to take Marvin Harrison Jr., which was a little bit of a whoa, because if you've been following Daniel Jeremiah for long enough, like, he tends to get the Jets pretty right pretty often. And so I don't think that was necessarily an uninformed decision. And what was especially interesting about that decision, or that about the, that kind of mock, Jay, that was published and sent to the editors before the Jets signed Teron Smith, right? Everybody kind of in the universe assumed, ah, yeah, 10, they take best tackle available, whatever. Well, he has them doing this crazy move of moving up to five to take Harrison. And then they, you know, they kind of finalize fortifying their offensive line with the signing of Smith. So it was, I don't think this is smoke. I don't think this is speculation, clickbait. There's nothing to say, nothing to talk about here. I do think that it's realistic that Harrison could be available at five, and that the pretty clearly either the Chargers, who have no wide receiver talent, could just say, wow, what good fortune we have to land a generational wide receiver, or they could trade out and, you know, give that opportunity to the likes of the Jets or whoever. So I think this the fact that you can get Harrison Jr. plus 340 for the fifth overall, the fact that you can get JJ McCarthy at 5-1 for the fourth overall, like, these aren't crazy prices for what I think are probably closer to just a little bit on, you know, more, you know, not 50-50, but maybe like 40%, 35%, something like that. Like, they I do not think that the smoke signal has come out of Arizona that we are standing pat at four and taking Marvin Harrison Jr. Have you heard anyone kind of make the case that that Arizona may even have eyes for someone else, like that they may see the likes of the Nabers being a better fit with their offense in terms of just wanting a speedster, a guy who can get open, a guy who can kind of replace the downfield production that they don't really have right now for, you know, paired well with a guy like Kyler Murray?
Well, first of all, I like your Hercule Poirot, Daniel Jeremiah, Mesemi kind of quip. I think everything that I've heard is that for all the chatter about Neighbors and MSJ kind of sliding a little bit, that he is still the most likely wide receiver to be picked first. And I think that he will be, particularly when you consider that, you know, I still think the Cardinals are the most likely team to, that's the spot where teams will trade into to draft a quarterback, who at this point looks like to be JJ McCarthy, to be the next quarterback off the board after, if we presume that the top three are still Caleb, Drake May, and Jaden Daniels. And it seems like with the trade of Keenan Allen that the Chargers just kind of have to draft a wide receiver. Like, I don't think they can go into the season with what they have right now, and perhaps they could trade back in the first round, and it's maybe the deepest wide receiver class of all time, so they might be able to get someone in the mid-first round. But that seems like where that is headed now. And then you go down to the Giants at six, where I think the assumption has always been that the Giants will take whoever the best wide receiver is left, whether that's I don't think MHA will reach six, but whether that's Malik Neighbors, who right now is the favorite to go six to plus 130, or Roman Dunze, who's plus 470 to go there, which seems a little long to me, given that I think if you ask the average Giants fan, like, who's the most likely player for them to take at six, it would probably be Roman Dunze, but maybe this JJ McCarthy buzz has kind of sunk that. But what do you think are the ripple effects of the draft if Minnesota or someone else trades to four and takes presumably McCarthy?
Yeah, I mean, it makes the five the most interesting pick in the draft, right? What do the Chargers do? It feels a little unfair to put Marvin Harrison Jr. with with Herbert for a duration of their careers. That said, I guess here's the thing: how many mocks have you seen now where the Chargers are taking a tackle? That doesn't sound right to me at all. Like, what are you doing? Why are we doing this? Why is this echoing into eternity that the Chargers are going to take a tackle? Like, I don't understand that. I think that's silly. And I know that, like, yeah, there's a new regime and Harbaugh wants to establish the run. No. You need talent and the skill position group. That was your whole problem last year. Like, honestly, of any problem with the Chargers last year, they did not have enough talent among the skill position group. And you've gotten rid of the only true blue guy you had in Keenan Allen. So, and he was old and expensive. And so I get it, but like, yeah, they absolutely have to repopulate that. But the two things that happen, if Minnesota trades up to four, it's exciting that now you potentially have two rookie quarterbacks in the NFC North, which is fun. Number two, five becomes a very interesting pick for lots of reasons. Is somebody going to get Harrison Jr. Are the Chargers just going to take him? And then in terms of ripple effects on the rest of the draft, I still don't think that the Raiders have necessarily solved the quarterback position. I don't think the Broncos have solved the quarterback position. And those two teams picking in the early teens is fascinating to kind of figure out, like, do you see QB five and six go in round one? If there is, there's an arms race like this, four quarterbacks, one, two, three, four, like that tends to kind of, you can't necessarily now expect, well, we have an early second round pick. Maybe we can get Michael Penix there. Right now, all of a sudden you're like, shoot, I guess we got to take Penix at 12 or whatever. Right. So, I think it could ultimately cause an arms race for where quarterbacks just go, run, go, go, go. And then that allows the, really talented wide receivers, tackles, and whoever, you value at a defensive priority position to slide to the teams that are already expected to be playoff contenders. So, it sets things up really well for the teams that are picking in kind of the late teens and the 20s to get like blue chip players at, elite positions. So,
Hey, Fidelity. How can I remember to invest every month?
With the Fidelity app, you can choose a schedule and set up recurring investments in stocks and ETFs.
Oh, that sounds easier than I thought.
You got this.
Yeah, I do. Now, where did I put my keys?
You will find them where you left them.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Have you heard any buzz on any QB5, QB6 going around one?
Not so much, but I do think the most interesting guy in the draft is JJ, where, if this were an Agatha Christie novel, Hercule Poirot would be tracking JJ's movements to lead him to the killer, where I think that there's been some buzz about the Giants even taking JJ McCarthy, which would be a little bit weird given they have Daniel Jones and they signed Drew Locke. But I guess if you're in this position in the draft, I guess the smartest thing is just to keep taking swings at high upside quarterbacks, which McCarthy certainly is. Like, he's not Bo Nix. He is. There is some kind of Will Levis vibes to JJ in terms of just everything floating around him in the draft. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he fell. Wouldn't be surprised if he went 3 or 4 either. There was even some JJ 2 buzz for a while, though I think that has died down a little bit. Is there anything interesting to you in this 6, 7, 8 markets?
Yes. So first tackle off the board's going 7. Yes. I don't think we can really at this point parse anything else besides what the Titans have done with their free agency, other than they're going to continue to try to fortify their offensive line with the first tackle picked on the board. Who that player is, I don't think is very clear at all. I've seen I've at least 3 different tackles who are, kind of with number one with the bullet OT1. A lot of guys have had him near the top. Olu Fashanu has been kind of thrust up there on a number of boards. And then Telesi Fuaga from Oregon State is kind of in the mix as well. So there are pretty clearly 3 guys that could hit that number. And if you want to take some of the uncertainty away and just play position to be drafted by the Titans as a tackle, like that was -190 at one point last week after they signed Ridley. And it was like, all right, guys, maybe they do something crazy. Like maybe they take a defensive player. Like, I don't know, who knows? But I feel like that was a little bit of low hanging fruit there. And people keep mocking defense to the Falcons. It's like, I don't know. I mean, maybe they take a defender. Maybe they take the defensive best defensive player on the board at 8. But it is kind of wild that we could be talking about 9 offensive players out of 10 picks in the top 10. And it is pretty incredible that you could have a draft where I think by all accounts, people kind of understand and recognize there are 9 true blue starting, O-linemen. In round 1 O linemen potentially who could go in this first round of this draft, and maybe only one of them goes in the top 10. That's pretty tough to square that you would then have some wild run late. So I think a lot of the bad teams picking at the top of the draft might have some swings at offensive linemen early on day 2, you could have a little bit of a premium on quarterback. We'll see.
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing in the draft, in a way, is that it's the deepest wide receiver class, like I said, maybe ever. And you have teams who are picking 4th and 5th, who seemingly have a need at receiver, and that those are the slots most likely to be traded into to draft quarterbacks. And so just logically makes all the sense in the world that one of those teams is going to make a move. And you would figure that it's more likely the Cardinals, And then the Chargers would draft Marvin Harrison Jr. or Malik Nabers, whoever is there. But I think that is a compelling aspect. Before we get out of here, I've been doing some NFL prep for next season and just looking at schedules and stuff, which is obviously super key. And just one random thing that I found out, I kind of forgot that the Bengals finished fourth in the division.
Yeah.
And by virtue of that, the Bengals, they're three extra games this season, because the way that schedule is set, for anyone who doesn't know, is that in your division, you play basically 14 of the same opponents, and then the extra three games are variable. And the Bengals' extra three games are against the Panthers, the Titans, and the Patriots. And the Ravens' extra three games are against the Bills, the Texans, and the Bucks. That is a massive swing in terms of just division equity. And then when you factor in the Ravens lost all these guys in free agency and perhaps overachieved on offense relative to what they perhaps should have done, given that they were just, the Ravens trailed by a touchdown like for 14 minutes all season or something. They're just able to run the ball all year. Yeah, I don't know. I just found that an interesting tidbit. Have you got anything else on the NFL before we sign off?
No, but I'm very glad you brought that up, because I've been kind of consistently impressed by what the Bengals are doing broadly. Yeah. my general temperature on the free agency moves has been unimpressed across the league. But the Bengals keep doing things that are like, oh, all right. Okay. That's interesting. That's nice. Well done. And I think, that three-game sample you just pointed out, like the delta and expected wins there, if the Bengals and the Ravens are dead neutral, equal teams at full strength, which I don't think is crazy, the delta on those three games has got to be 2.5 wins.
2.5 is a lot out of potential three. I mean, it's a big shift, certainly.
The Bills, the Texans, those are kind of 50-50 games. So you're getting one, right?
Yeah, they play away to the Bucks. It's away to the Bucks, away to the Texans, home to the Bills. So, yeah, it's like one expected win against the Bills and the Texans combined, about that. And then slight favorites at Tampa, you'd figure. Yeah. So it's like 1.6, 1.7.
Okay, so then the delta is 1.4 then, because the Bengals are three expected wins there. I'm going to tell you.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth a win to the
It's worth the win.
The Bengals. So, yeah, that's significant. That ripples into a lot of markets. So, yeah, I mean, right now the Ravens are clear favorites for that division, and I'm not necessarily sure they should be. But, yeah, anyway, one to keep track of. We'll have plenty of time to talk about the AFC North as we sit here on March 19th, but that could be an interesting one. All right, we are done. Don't forget to check out NBCSports.com for more information to help you with your wagers. Thanks to those of you watching on the NBC Sports YouTube channel. If you're listening to us in podcast form, don't forget to rate and subscribe. Also, a reminder to find all your favorite NBC Sports shows on Amazon Music. Just head to amazon.com/NBCSports. From Jay Crouch and Drew Dinsick, we'll see you soon.
Hey, Fidelity. What's it cost to invest with the Fidelity app?
Start with as little as $1 with no account fees or trade commissions on U.S. stocks and ETFs.
That's music to my ears.
I can only talk.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Zero account fees apply to retail brokerage accounts only. $0 commission applies to online U.S. equity trades and ETFs and retail Fidelity accounts. Sell order assessment fee not included. Some account types and securities excluded. Details at fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.